Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, or you can find me on Instagram at the same name. But most importantly, for those who are listening to this, you are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you're at the most efficient way to get the podcast. Enter Warman Kickfighting Show into your iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. First of all, I want to tell you guys in advance, I'm on location. I'm working a fight in Halifax, Canada right now, so I apologize if the only area that I can find that's quiet is just kind of on one of the higher floors in this hotel. So if you get any type of interruption, somebody passing by, or, you know, maybe you hear the noise of the elevator, somebody talking, whatever, I'll do my best to just keep talking and working right through it. But it may happen, but I needed to find the best place I could to do this podcast, and I want to make sure I got it out to you guys because, of course, we've got the big infusion card going on tomorrow. But I want to get this to you early enough so that you guys can go through my breakdown of it and enjoy the fights. It should be a really good one. It's a really big card, and it's one of the first big cards of the season. You know, Glory had one last month, but I really think that this is one of the premier cards of the year, and it has, of course, one of the rematches as a rematch from what was the fight of the year last year. So we'll go ahead and get into I'm actually going to start the show off in Japan as we go to Knockout. Knockout had their second show, and not only is it like – so for those of you who are unfamiliar with the Knockout brand, basically it is a promotion that delivers high-paced, I would say, Muay Thai, because they definitely do allow elbows, and but they don't have the longest clinch. But the action and the presentation is done extremely well. The most important thing that they've had so far is they've been getting finishes, and that helps. It helps when people go to watch your combat sports brand and – you see a definitive winner, and there's nothing more definitive than stopping the other individual. So this card of the, what is it, 8 fights that they had on the main card, I think the 6 of them were finishes. So it's always good to your brand and to your sport that you do that. Plus, it's always great when the social media engine gets going on some of your stoppages, which is, of course, what happened with Tenshin Nasukawa, the super prospect who's still in high school and yet finds enough time to train and get wins in this promotion and all over Japan. Now, again, I've seen people go crazy and they want him to go against Elite Ties and see how he'll do and that kind of deal, whatever. Right now, let him be himself. Let him be a full-time student that gets the opportunity to fight for kickboxing and Muay Thai brands, sometimes MMA. Let him be a prize fighter. And it might mean that he's got to go this route until he's freed up from at least his high school, you know, life. And then after he's free there, he's good to put in the focus to go against some of the more elite guys in the world. But right now, he's doing a good job of beating who they sent him. I'll go ahead and start with I won't start with Tenshin Nasukawa. I will start with Genji Umino. Genji Umino gets a victory over Juan Mario Kusumrit. Genji Umino is a guy I thought that, you know, would have success here. They've used him on their promotion before. He's a mainstay in Japan. I think he's a solid fighter. I don't think that he's ever going to bring the doesn't have the star power potential that Tenshin Nasukawa has, but he's a good guy for the brand, and he's always going to put on an entertaining show. I'll also go to Yuma Yamaguchi, gets a victory over Hikari Machida. That is a third-round TKO. I wasn't able to get that stoppage, but I like that it builds on what we've already talked about before. Tusuke Mori gets a 5-round draw over Hirotashi Murata. And then Kenta, of course, who you guys are familiar with from fighting for K1, very talented, very good athlete. Sometimes I just worry about putting consistent kickboxing together. Seems like he was able to put it together, and this night he gets a stoppage in the 5th round. Isuka Ogasawara gets a victory over Hiroya Haga. TKO in the 2nd. Again, stoppages. Stoppages is what we're talking about. Fukashi gets a stoppage over Hiroya Yamaguchi. These fighters are not household names, people who are developing themselves, but in the end, they're getting these TV opportunities. And when you get stoppages, it adds to your brand and the draw that goes to you. So Kent, of course, we mentioned before, he's a name. But the biggest name on the card is Tenshin Nasukawa. And I would still say Umino probably has more of a a steady fan base from being in the sport for a longer period of time. I think more people might recognize him as a mainstay because of his age, maybe being older. But Nasukawa is the future. Like, this kid has got all the tools to be a great kickboxer. He could pick up where, you know, or at least add on to what's happening right now with Takuru. And Takuru was clearly the biggest star since, I mean, some people don't want to hear it, but this would be real. Takuru is the biggest star in kickboxing in Japan since Masato. Yoshihiro Sato, good fighter, got to the K-1 World Grand Prix Final, had some good runs, but I don't think the crowd ever gravitated to him the way that they could have, you know. And I think it's because, you know, despite the fact that he stopped Bukau, you know, he's the guy to do that. He's got a mark, a moment in history, and that matters greatly. But people know him, see him, remember him as a solid fighter, fought full rules Muay Thai, had the work rate, but he didn't draw the audience in. Now, Masato, who I'll talk about a little bit later, of course, he had both the physical appeal that the girls liked, and he had the exchanges and the combat style and the kickboxing acumen that the sportsmen of us liked, you know, the casual, you know, and he went to battle. It's not like he was a clean touch and go guy. Masato exchanged with you. Since Masato, I would say Takuru was the first guy who I would truly say has that kind of star power draw. Like at least, I'm not saying that he's as big as Masato. I'm saying that there's similarities in terms of how people are drawn to this individual. I think Tenshin Nasukawa is the next there. And I think if he can get some fights in K-1, doesn't necessarily mean top of the card. Just give me somebody, you know, get him some international experience against not an older Thai like he got here against Amna Runwing. Give me a guy who's just kind of, you know, Steve Moxon type. You know what I'm saying? Like, that would be a really good fight for Nasukawa. I mean, like, that style of fighter. Not necessarily Moxon, but like that style of fighter would be, that level of fighter would be perfect for Nasukawa moving forward. So I really think that he's got the goods. I think that he's a talent. And Tenshin Nasukawa is a name that if you are hearing this for the first time in this podcast, you got to check this kid out. Tenshin and then Nasukawa, Nasukawa. Give the kid a shot and give Knockout a shot. They're trying to do a better job of getting their fights out there for people to see. This is a kid that's must-see TV. And if you look up his name, you're going to see some stoppages right away. He also fought MMA, so that comes into play as well. But it's very important that if you really pay attention to sport, if you really want to see the up-and-comers that are coming around the corner, this is one of the guys that you need to pay attention to. Tenshin Nasukawa. I am going to go there to, I'll go ahead and just give you some general news. I had one of my students, he runs a gym in Minnesota, and he got to attend the Yakao seminar with Sanchai, and he got to spar with him. He got to get in and do like one of the instructionals with him, and they are loving it. It's one of the cooler things that I think I've heard about as far as Sanchai traveling the world and so on. Sanchai, of course, was a big deal in the stadiums. He was a draw. People loved him, fought bigger, had that, you know, okay in the clinch, but more with body locks, didn't really pummel and work high with knees, but he was such a savvy boxer, really smooth kickboxing, and of course he has the Sanchai kick where he does the handstand kick and he's able to score that, the jumping inside leg kick. Sanchai is awesome. So the fact that he's traveling the nation, showing his skills, breaking down, you know, combos, and then of course he's sparring, just a guy who's so used to it. I mean, what shot do you have that's a surprise for him? You know, you ain't gonna do nothing that's gonna shock him. He's seen it all. He is now traveling the U.S., and he's doing a good job of doing seminars and giving people just a moment to experience being in there with one of the best fighters of our generation. It's really cool that he's doing it. I like it a lot. It's been fun. It's been fun, hearing the different stories, and my fighter spoke glowingly of that moment, and it's really cool. So I'm glad that Sanchai is doing it. Shout out to the Yakao, seminars. If it comes to your town, give it a shot, Yokkao. And if you have any questions, maybe you're a gym owner and you're hearing this, contact Stefania Capelli, Stefania, so that's Stefania, and then her last name is Picelli, so I believe that's pronounced Picelli. So give her a shout on, find her on Facebook, Find her on Instagram. I believe she runs their page. So give her a shot, and that would be a great way for you to, you know, maybe while they're out here, they can stop by your gym. They can tell you what the details are to make that happen. So it's really cool, and I'm really glad that this came about. Going to go ahead and go into some more general news, just things that gets the sport out there. There's the Idris Elba short documentary done by Discovery that's been out there, and I'm sure people wanted me to talk about it. I was waiting until all the episodes were out before I brought it up. But basically, Idris Elba, the actor, he's in a lot of things, but he's an English actor who is in his late 40s, and he decided that he wanted to go give kickboxing a chance. And he gets with Kieran Kettle. Kieran Kettle, of course, we know is one of the better – he was a good Muay Thai fighter, really solid fighter, got to fight kickboxing and Muay Thai, got to go against some high-level Thais, really put himself out there, became a trainer. And when he became a trainer, the athletes that he put together, he's got some really good fighters, and it was cool to see that Idris was able to get with him and to kind of walk him down the path, and Idris gets to go. He meets Masato. Masato holds pads for him for a little bit. Tyrone Spong makes an appearance in it. He gets to go against a lot of really talented guys. Jamie Whalen, he gets to spar with him. Whalen, of course, is one of Kieran Kettle's guys. It's a cool documentary. Shows him put the work in. He travels. He does it a little bit differently. They do it very much for TV because he does Kyokushin. I think he gets with a teacher who does like more of a Kyokushin style, like a karate style. I couldn't make out what it was when I was listening to the video. But, of course, Masato is Masato, and he gets to watch I think it's a Crush event. I'm not exactly sure it's Crush or Rise, but it's a Japan kickboxing event. He gets to go there. He goes to Thailand. He gets to experience that. He puts himself out there. And my favorite thing is that Kieran, in interviews, he assured people that this wasn't, you know, this wasn't a fixed fight. He went out there, he fought, he, you know, had some moments where he got hit, but he put on a show, and of course he's able to get the KO stoppage in this one. It's cool that he put himself into it, that he gave it a shot. Who knows if he'll ever do it again, but the fact that he put himself in there, he's really getting hit, he's really doing the sparring, and Kieran Kettle, who's worked with other actors in the past, like he's be the most ideal person I'd pick in England to work with for this sort of thing. I thought it was a really cool thing to check out. Just go Idris Elba, IDRISELBA for that last name, and it comes right up. Like, it'll, you know, go Idris Elba kickboxing, and then the show will pop up, and you'll be able to get a hold of the episodes. They are, you might not get the full, but you'll get them broken down in pieces if you go to YouTube. So definitely give it a shot. Idris Elba, as he gives kickboxing a shot. And, you know, shout out to Mike's Jam for producing an athlete who'd get in there with him. I am now going to go ahead and go into the big news of the weekend, which, of course, as I mentioned before, is the Infusion live card. Infusion, of course, still going through their kickboxing series. They're still going through their, you know, their tournament. Soccer-style tournament where they're pretty much going to have everybody go in pools. And then after the pools are done, they're going to take the top four, eliminate the bottom two, and then have a tournament with the four to see who's the champion. As it stands, Typhoon Oskin is a clear leader on points and so on. Just tournament-wise, it's worked out that way. But this card, top to bottom, is very entertaining. There's a lot of good stuff in it. It literally, if you get there for the beginning of it, thanks to the, you know, I mean, it even goes as far as having, you know, a novice J-class or novice class is, you know, newling is the term that I heard when I was out in Holland. They've got those fights on it as well. So from the first fight to the end, I'm looking at 31 fights on this card. So talk about getting your money's worth. Now, in the beginning, those newling fights, those are like three times one. You know, those are three rounds, 1 minute. But the fact that you get that much for your money, that means a lot. That goes a long way. So real cool stuff there. But we'll go ahead and get into the fights that I think are worth mentioning. It's a solid card, and there is good things to talk about throughout. But I'm going to start with the main card, and I'm going to start with – I will go – Fikri Amezian as he takes on Daniel Sam. Now, Fikri Amezian, of course, probably the first time any of you guys have ever heard his name or ever seen him fight, he fought on Showtime in Lyon as a replacement, and he went against Daniel Guida. And, of course, Daniel Guida, put in work with the low kicks and really did a good job of getting him out of there. And then after that, I'd always see Fikri. Always in the corner. He's there with Badr Hari. He's just, because Moroccan, they've known each other for a long time. I see him around all the time, but he wasn't putting in the work as a kickboxer until I'd say the last couple years. Not saying that he wasn't fighting out there, but I just felt like I didn't see any consistency. I didn't see any growth. I didn't see him move on or move up in class. I didn't feel like he became one of the better guys because he's a good-sized guy, and his tools aren't bad. It's just the kind of the consistency in the kickboxing work. So I'm glad that he stayed with it. Daniel Sam is his first big step up, I'd say, since that bout with Gita. He's had some other opportunities, but I think this fight with Sam will go a long way. I have Daniel Sam winning it. I still see Daniel Sam as the better, more seasoned kickboxer of the two, despite the fact that Sam's a full rules Muay Thai guy who does kickboxing. I think that he beats Fikri Amazian, but Fikri needed it. He needs this kind of fight. It'll help him move forward. So shout out there. Next fight I'm going to talk about, Samantha Van Dorn, as she takes on Georgina Van Der Linden. I'm a big fan of Samantha Van Dorn. If she doesn't get, if she doesn't have Iman Barlow in front of her, she can get into her combination low kick game pretty good. Like, she's got a good hook to low kick. She's quick there. As long as she doesn't stuff her own offense, she really scores good. So if you look at her fight, one of the better fights of that year, and of course, again, it's Yona Wyman. So it's like whenever someone's in there with Wyman's puts on a type of performance that you enjoy just in general because of her style. But Samantha and Yona put on a good show because neither of them stuffed their offense. They didn't get into a lot of holds. They were in kickboxing range. And that's something that we need to see more of in Holland. I think sometimes when they're exchanging, they just get into the grapple a little bit too much and the shots aren't coming as clean. But when they get their space and they put it together and they're not throwing wild, there's still some very talented fighters in Holland that aren't just people who are looking for the KO. There's people who are down to scrap, but the clean, smooth, effective kickboxing, it's seen in some of the high-level guys like Robin van Roosmalen or Nicky Holtzgen, but some of the others are starting to get a little bit wild there. So this is a good fight. I've got Samantha Van Dorn winning it, and Georgina will have moments, but still, Van Dorn is the better, more seasoned kickboxer who's gone against better opposition. Next fight is Ismael Lazar as he takes on Martin Bocas. This is a KO for me. Lazar, of course, it always comes down to his weight. If his weight's a little bit lower, I'm not saying he's got to be super low, but he's got to be low enough to throw those big overhands and hooks. And he's got a decent low kick game when he uses it, but he really is just trying to put them hands on you. And I think Martin Pakas is going to give him the opportunity. The Slovakian fighter is solid, but I still think he's just the name. If I see his name against anybody of note in the heavyweight division, I would pick them against him. And Ismael Lazar is, I feel like this is the kind of fight where he's going to land something big and he's going to put Pakas down. So probably a KO in round one for the big fella, Ismael Lazar. Next fight on the card, Ibrahim El-Bustadi. I'm not sure if this is a title fight. I think it is, but he'll take on Ulrich Bokemi of Switzerland. Ibrahim is going to win. He's a talented guy. Again, when he's in space, he really shows me some good things. I hate when he gets in the grapple. I hate when he gets so wild that he doesn't have the clean, effective strikes that he can do. He does some good things. I just think the desire to want to bang and fight cuts off his offense sometimes. But Ibrahim El-Bustadi is a talented guy. He's on a roll. I really want to see him do well in this one. Not just win by KO, but give me some clean kickboxing before the KO happens. Next fight in the card, Yasir Belter as he takes on Redan Larkubi. Both guys, I lean towards Beitar just a little bit, but Radion isn't bad. This fight is kind of a fight of guys who they use on this promotion that aren't really standouts at this time. I'm going to switch that. I'm going to go Radion Larkubi as the winner here. I think that he offers just a little bit more, but this is one of those fights where it could get nasty. They could get into the clinch because of their desires to bang too much. If it gets in space, I think it can be good, but man, they got to leave that gap for them to have offensive efficiency throughout. Without it, it can get a little ugly. Next fight on the card is Tayfun Askin beating Johnny Risco. Johnny Risco's got some good wins. He got the Andy Sauer win in extra rounds. I still don't think that he is on Tayfun Askin's level. I think Tayfun's the best fighter in the tournament, and I think that he carries the weight the best. I think he's a strong, effective fighter for, I believe this has been done at 160 pounds. He's, or 72.5 kgs. He's just a clean kickboxing. I like the combo to head kick. I like his, return offense. And outside of that one glitch where he got stopped in China, he's been on form lately. So I've got Tayfun Askin taking it. Nurdin Binmo and Muhammad Jiraiya do it again. And, of course, if you know anything about or if you've been following kickboxing at all, this was the fight. It was the fight of the year last year. In particular, even if you didn't have a fight of the year, you had round three, round of the year. And it starts off with Muhammad Jiraiya. Both guys, they do a good job, a better job of staying in kickboxing range, which allowed good kickboxing exchanges. Then Jiraiya lands a shot that gets Nurdin Binmo in trouble. And then when he closes the gap to put him down, Nurdin Binmo hits him with something and Jiraiya goes down. And it's at the end of the round, so we've got 10-8. Jiraiya then is able to get the kickboxing going, and he wins round two. Then we go into round three, and we're like, all right, Jiraiya needs to win this round to force an extra, or he needs to score it down to move this fight further. He scores the down pretty early into the round. He's on the hunt, scores a big shot, and all of a sudden you see Nurdin Binmo go down, and you're like, Jiraiya's not just back in it. He could be winning depending on how they have the cards. So Binmo gets up, and I'm telling you, maybe – after one, maybe a few shots are exchanged, he lands a big shot and Jiraiya goes down. And they happen bang, bang. And when Jiraiya goes down, you could see the eyes are glazy. He's in bad shape. And the crowd is just going nuts because it's such a comeback. Nurdin Binmo then gets on him, tries to close the distance. They get into the clinch a couple times. And then after one separation, Jiraiya lands a big right hand as they come together and Binmo goes down. And it's such a great just scene just in fighting in general, because you can see Nurdin Binmo's corner like getting upset and like throwing the towel down or something like that, but just the visual of it is just so crazy because it's such a back and forth moment, and for guys to go down and for that stoppage, and then the way Muhammad Jiraiya kind of celebrated afterwards with the big scream and throwing the mouthpiece, and it was just great. It's great theater, great kickboxing. It's a great moment for the sport. I've got Jiraiya winning because I feel like he can win the kickboxing battle a little bit cleaner. I'm not going to take the chances that Binmo lands another big shot to put him down, which he can. I'm always going to lean towards who do I think is going to win the most rounds. I'd say 90% of the time when I'm picking fights. I got Muhammad Jiraiya winning this one, but I think Nurdin Binmo is the kind of fighter that if you pay attention to him, and you notice how far he's come and some of the early opportunities. He's got some, back in the day, I think he had to fight in Japan and just his run in Holland. He's a solid fighter, and I think this is going to be another good fight, but nothing like what they did last year. Last year was special. Just round two just doesn't work as well. Like Muhammad Jiraiya, when he went against Askin the second time, just wasn't the same. And when he went against him the third time, it wasn't the same. Just sometimes, just one day, one special day, it comes together and it's all great. Probably one of the best fights of the first half of the year is Ilias Belaid as he takes on Zachariah Zoghri. Zachariah, however you want to say it, he is a really smooth, entertaining kickboxer. Like really, really entertaining stuff. Combination of low kick stuff. He's got that, it's almost looking like old Dutch stuff now, Dutch style now. But he really plays with the hands of the low kicks really, really well. Very entertaining fighter to watch. Jumping knees, spinning kicks here and there. They're done at the right time. Not done all the time, done at the right time. He is must-see TV when this guy fights. Very, very good. He takes on Ilias Belaid, and the thing about Belaid is he is a all-action kickboxer who really has good combination flow, good inside. Like when the volume's working, he's in good shape. One thing that I would say Belaid will struggle with is he did allow too many low kicks to land on him when he gets Masaki Nori. And Zoghri is going to be coming with the low kick. So has he adjusted there? Is he going to have his check ready? Or is he going to have a good high kick game to keep Zoghri off balance? He's going to have volume. I really think this fight could be one of the best fights of the year. They've got the styles. They're doing this. There's like a little documentary out there. Check it out, Infusion Live. Find their YouTube stream. And they've got like a little documentary breakdown shows him talking to Zakaria, it's really good stuff, and they're doing a good job of selling the sport and getting it out there. But Ilias Bulaid versus Zachary Zoghori is one of the better fights that you're going to see, and I haven't even seen it yet. Just style-wise, I think this is going to have the potential to be fight of the year if both guys are standing up long enough for it to be fight of the year. Clearly, a big shot can land from either of them. KO could come from either of them, but I just think it's going to be a really entertaining back and forth fight. I lean Bulaid just because I think he's more accomplished against better opposition. You know, I thought that his run in K1 gave him some wins and some experience. Zoghori, who should be, you know, he should have won back to back shoot boxing championships, but the opposition there isn't super high. I think that he did a good job of beating the guys who were in front of him, and I think that his skill level will be tested going against some of the guys in Fusion. But this is the kind of fight that needs to happen in our sport. It'll be a great fight. The crowd will go crazy for either guy, both Moroccan. This is going to be fun. This is going to have that feel. So to have the top of your card be Nordin Binmo versus Muhammad Jiraiya, that's your second to last fight, and your last fight is Ilias Bulaid versus Zakaria Zoghori, you really put together an awesome show. So that's Infusion. Clearly, whenever I bring up Infusion, the other thing that has to come into play is they've got to do something about getting their fights out to the people, because they have what's supposed to be a Fight Pass deal where you get their old library and you can watch some of their old events, but you can't watch the you know, like a WWE Network. WWE Network's got the old library, and you can watch all the new pay-per-view events live. That's what I thought that you'd be paying for with this. You don't get that at all. You don't get the new events live. You've got to wait till they get archived. So the whole purpose of getting it is for their old fights, but not all their old fights are that great. So they're doing everything in their power to keep their fights off of YouTube, except for the few that they put on, the really big ones. But they're not – those fights don't really sell – going to Infusion Live and getting the membership. Like, there's not even a strong push to get the memberships out there. You know, it's just not working. So they have these fights and you hear about them, and really I'm going to be reduced to looking at, I won't have a stream because they don't have a TV deal. They've got to get some sort of TV deal somewhere. It should be easy to do. Even in delay, they've got to be getting it on Fight Club or something. It shouldn't be this long. It shouldn't be this hard to see their kickboxing product. They've got some really talented guys, and the world needs to see them. But to imagine that they've got – I remember they had a pay-per-view, and I bought the pay-per-view, and then I listened to the Liver Kick podcast, and they talked about how 14 people had gotten this pay-per-view, and I was one of the 14 to get it, you know? So it's like – and I'm in America. They got to do a better job of getting their brand out there before they can start going to pay-per-view. You can't rush to that sort of thing. So just stream all their events live. Find a sponsor that, you know, has an international brand. And, you know, maybe it's a candy bar or something like that where people can get to it, you know, easy access to it. But find a sponsor and get yourself a stream or get yourself a TV deal. But this pay-per-view, and not even really pay-per-view, but pay-per-archive option that you've got isn't going to work moving forward. This is a great kickboxing card. This is a great kickboxing event. And once upon a time, I used to be able to go straight to either my phone or, you know, my computer and go to the stream. And one time, Jiraiya, I think it was Bulaid, was fighting. It was either Jiraiya or Bulaid. I can't remember. But I remember I posted on my wall, watch these guys fight. They're all action. And, you know, Pat Wyman, he saw it, you know, Heavy Hands podcast. He saw the post and then he watched the fight because I posted the link to it right away. And the next thing you know, a guy who's, you know, got all, you know, one of the bigger podcasts in the country, he's got all these Twitter followers. He posts on it and he gets your brand out there. So I've probably, me doing that post saying, check this guy out, probably got Muhammad Jiraiya's name out there more than anything that their brand has done to the international market lately. Their model right now keeps people from watching their sport, not helping it grow. So I'm hoping that at some period of time, they get themselves a TV deal or a streaming deal, and the local fans have got to be able to watch it. I can watch the K1 World Grand Prix events. I should be able to watch the Infusion Live events. I'm going to go ahead and wrap the show up with my Legend series, as I've been doing. talking about what makes people great, what makes them a legend, what makes them different, what makes them more than just, you know, I'm not saying that one person is a legend and one person isn't, but I am saying there are some really talented people out there, and that doesn't necessarily make them a legend. To be a legend, you've got to do a little bit more than just getting your hands raised all the time. People have got to look at your resume and see something special. And I think that there are guys, you know, I brought up a guy who I might be doing in Samir Mohamed and his big time run that he had in France. I don't think that he's anywhere close to being the legend that Fabio Pinca is, in my personal opinion. But I still think that he had a great run. There are guys out there who've got great runs, great records, but the people that I'm trying to talk about are legends, and I want you guys to know what makes them legends, and it's more than just wins and losses. It's when you step outside, when you step into someone's living room, when you step into someone's heart, when you step into their memory of the sport, then you've done something special. Then you've done something legendary. And if you can give them moments and build on moments with resume, that's what makes someone an elite. So we're going to talk about Masato Kobayashi, or of course, as you guys know him simply as Masato, and talk about what made Masato great. First, let's look at his history. He goes into his kickboxing career, and most people, of course, you guys know if you listen to this podcast or if you follow any of his kickboxing highlights and so on, but he actually loses his second fight to a guy who's going to be a really good fighter down the road, and Takayuki Kohiramaki. But he pretty much gets in a role fighting for All Japan Kickboxing. He shows the skill set. He begins fighting predominantly Japanese fighters. And then after he gets on a roll, I want to say he really found his stride around 1998. Before that, he had some victories. Not saying he had no victories, but 98, he really found his stride. He had a draw against Hiroyuki Doi. But take that one away. He had stops victory over Tetsumasa Shimomura, and then that was a stoppage there, and he had Tomohari Chiba, that was another KO stoppage. But he starts to go in this role where he wins in 1999, what is it, 6 times in that year, all for All Japan Kickboxing. So he gets on a roll, gets a victory over a Thai fighter in Thailand. And then he gets a victory over Melcher Menner. Now, that one mattered because Melcher Menner is the guy who had international name at the time. He'd fought and all over. And also, it should be noted, and he didn't go against a Japanese fighter from 1999. What was that? May 11th. From May 11th to 2000 and, you know, up until the K-1 World Grand Prix, he didn't go against a Japanese fighter. He kept going international. So now you're starting to think, this kid's got a chance if he can beat the foreigners too. And you just move slowly. You don't have to jump right into it. He just took baby steps. He didn't go against the most elite guys, but he built his resume. Go against a guy from Italy. Go against a guy from France. Go against a guy from America. Built it up. Gets an opportunity to go against a Thai in Thailand. Worked out the first time. And then I would say his first big-time victory internationally was Murad Sari. That was a solid guy. Solid guy. He stopped him with a left hook in the second round. Then, of course, he has the loss to Soroya. That took place King's birthday. It was actually a very dominant win. I remember watching that fight. But then he comes back and he gets a victory over Muhammad Ali. Now, most people don't know him, but Muhammad Ali was a Moroccan fighter who's based out of Holland. He's fought Tyrone Spong. He's got a pretty good record. And he got a victory there. Then Patrick Erickson, that was a victory. Now, all this stuff is building towards, and I really want to talk about, like, all the fights I was talking about, they built towards the Patrick Erickson's fight because something interesting happened in that one. K1 Burning had an event, and of course, we all know K1 it's a heavyweight, you know, it's a heavyweight organization. But that was almost like a trial period, the Murad Sari fight, also, again, a trial period to see, do we have something special here? You know, heavyweight, a whole heavyweight card, and then all of a sudden, you see Masato get the opportunity. So let that be the first thing to stand out to you. They've got cards that are predominantly heavyweight, and they have this guy who fights at 154 pounds, and they give him a shot on the big card. And in his first opportunity, which would be the Patrick Erickson fight, the Murad Sari fight, he gets a stoppage victory. And then he gets another win. And then the wheels start turning. I've told you guys before, Masaki Satake is the reason why K-1 exists. He was a karate style guy. He got a victory over an undefeated American guy in Japan. And then they said, you know what, let's see what would happen if we put the best kickboxers in the world against each other. Let's say if we had a tournament. I'm sure it would have been great for them if Masaki Satake won it. But the whole purpose of it was to bring in the best. Here they had, but on the birth of, on the idea of, we had a guy in Japan that could compete with these guys as well. And Satake, he ended up getting to the K-1 World Grand Prix final one year. He never won it, but that's still pretty good considering how good the world was in kickboxing at that time. So flash forward from that, and you go to this, and you got Masato, and you say, okay, we've got this guy. And real early on, you started to see the other factors. He could go on to different homes. So the women liked him. He had a great appeal to him. Definitely, you know, did modeling stuff, did acting stuff. Like people could see that there was a different draw to him than just his combat skills. But he fought in a way that made you say, all right, anybody can enjoy this guy. He brought that package to, you know, he brought it all with him. Then came what I'd say is one of the more violent, you know, periods of time of his fight career. He goes, Goran Danilovic, Ben Burton, Noel Suarez, which also happened in the K-1 World Grand Prix. Another example, not the World Max. That was on a K-1 event. He gets a single fight, and he gets a stoppage there. So the third time, K-1 gave him this opportunity. They played with fights before. They played with the Max division before. But the idea of a World Grand Prix didn't come into play. It was birth on victories like what he did with Noel Suarez. And then after that, he gets into the first K-1 Max tournament. Again, this is before the World Grand Prix. He gets into that tournament after a successful run with Noel Suarez being a KO victim in it as well. But he gets KO stoppages all the way up until the final of that K-1 Max in 2002, where he beats Kohei Yamaki, gets revenge, and he beats him in the final there to win his first and only K-1 Max title, Japan title. And you see the earmarks are there. You've got this guy. He's got the look. He's got, you know, the girls like him. You've got this appeal with his fight style because he's getting stoppages in the smaller weight class. You see, even before he'd gone into all the things that I mentioned to you before, is just set up for why this guy became a legend. Enter the first K-1 World Max Grand Prix. One of the most important things to happen to him and the legend of him is his loss to Albert Krauss, because the idea of Bushido, of never giving up, of pushing through and that kind of deal, whatever, it really comes in full when you meet opposition and then you suffer a loss and you have to bounce back from it. And when we think about moments in sports, if a team is down and they come back, you usually think that's a great game, you know. And if in fighting, if a guy gets knocked down and he comes back, you usually think that's a great game. And I really, really think and really, really appreciate what some of these great fighters have done throughout the years as far as adversity that they had gone through. And for Masato, it was the emotional moment of losing to Albert Krauss in a tournament that was pretty much set up for him to win. It was a tough one for him to take, but he had to bite down. He had a victory over Dwayne Ludwig earlier in the night, and then he loses to Albert Krauss. He goes out there, gets a victory over Melvin Murray, was a solid Canadian kickboxer. Most people don't know him. He fought with Full Rules Muay Thai too, solid guy. And then he gets to fight Albert Krauss again in a 5-rounder, and it's a draw. And after that fight, he cried as well too. Like, he burst into tears after he lost to Albert Krauss the first time. He burst into tears after the second time. But those moments, him being emotional, him, you know, being vulnerable in front of an audience, it made them love him more. You know, it made them say, this is our guy. This guy is tearfully engaged in who we are. I made a mistake earlier. I said that he'd only won one Japan Grand Prix. He won two. He won 2003 as well. That was my mistake. In that one, he beats Genki Sudo. He beats Murahuma. And the most important one is he beat Kozo Takada. And Kozo Takada, of course, was a great legend before him. He was one of the few Farangs to win a major Muay Thai stadium title, and pretty much did it with low kicks and left hooks. And he was able to get a victory over Takada, and that got him his second Max Grand Prix championship. Perfect setup to get him into the K-1 World Max tournament. beats Mike Zambides. When he beat Mike Zambides, who dropped him in the first round, he dropped Mike Zambides in the first round, and he had to hold on because Zambides was killing him in rounds two and three, in particular in round three. I personally had that fight a draw and wanted an extra round, but the knockdown gave him the victory there. Then he goes into gets a stoppage over Sekadao, the Thai fighter. He gets a right uppercut, very clean. And then we get the rematch with Albert Krauss. And this next part that I'm going to say is extremely, extremely important. He gets into an exchange with Albert Krauss. And during the exchange, he had this great ability to absorb a shot and throw a bigger shot. So in this exchange, I believe, if I remember correctly, it is a left hook. He rolls as he's getting hit with Albert Krauss's right hand, and the left hook comes over the top of it and drops Krauss. I'm going off of memory. I don't have this exactly right in my mind. But that moment where Krauss goes down and he gets KO'd in that second round, that is where Masato became something different. He is a guy who dealt with adversity and came back, didn't just come back, but came back to stop Albert Krauss in a spectacular K1 Max final. Came back to stop him. And just that, the whole idea, again, considered a pretty boy. Girls loved him, very, very drawn to him. And this guy is winning by eating your best shot and throwing a bigger shot behind it. This guy's taking your kick and throwing a better low kick back. This guy is, you know, out Dutch kickboxing the Dutch guys and outboxing the boxers and you know, well, I'd say low kicking the boxers. But, like, he's finding his moments. But the Albert Krauss victory was the first time when someone had that memory, you know, that, you know, for us in American sports and football, it's when someone catches that last second touchdown and you remember the touchdown, you remember the play, you remember where you were, last second basketball shot, you remember where you were when that shot went through. This was his kickboxing moment with Albert Krauss, and it was the first thing that kind of made him a legend long before he'd gotten there, that moment. Enter some guys that he was able to beat quite easily. Vince Phillips was a very good, you know, boxer who won a world champion, came over, got low kicked, stopped, actually went on to be another boxing world champion down the road. Serkan Yilmaz is a very tricky guy to fight. He was able to beat him. Jidemba Narantingulang, that guy was just tough. Beat Albert Krauss again in the final or the following year to show that he has number. And then here comes that adversity again. Bakal Polpermuk pretty much embarrassed him and smashed him for four rounds. It should not have gone to an extra round. The judges definitely, there was some Japanese bias there to send it to an extra round because Bakal had clearly won all three rounds. It was almost like they were trying to give him another opportunity to win it. But he didn't have it that night. That night, Bukau was better, and Bukau just beat him up in that round 3-2. And he bowed out, but this time he wasn't crying because he had gone through adversity before. Gets a fight over Kid Yamamoto, Chaibin Lim, Mike Zambides again, Akira Ogashi, Ian Chaffer. These are all just quality wins, some stoppages, but just quality wins, building his resume, trying to get himself back to where he was. Then he runs into Andy Sauer in the 2006 semifinal. He had, you know, gave good effort, but Sauer was able to build on him, scored a jumping knee, I want to say, and that put him down. But this time, he had dealt with adversity before, but he's looking to bounce back. The tournament format changed after this. It looked like he couldn't do three fights in the night anymore. So he was criticized for this a lot, but it showed the power that he had because he was the draw. Like, anytime he was on TV, people were watching. But he was critiqued quite heavily when they switched the format to not having three fights in one night, the final eight. They separated it, and people felt like they did it for him. So he gets Gaius's Cavalcante, and then he gets Bokal Polpermuk in the quarterfinals. And he gets it in a single fight, and in that single fight, it goes his way. You know, it's a fight where, this isn't the tournament it is yet. He gets the single fight, he goes against Bukau, and he says, my only goal is to beat Bukau in this. He scores a down early in the fight, and Bukau came back. And I thought that this one was worthy of a draw again, too. I thought Bukau came back well in two and three. But he scored the down early, was able to do enough, and they gave him the decision, and he moves forward. He stops a very young, but going to be a future great himself, Artur Kashenko, in the next fight. So they haven't broken the tournament field down yet. And then Andy Sauer stops him by low kicks due to seeing the damage that Bukau had done in the early round. That's why I think people who win K1 World Grand Prix are special. It's an attrition thing. It's the battle of trying to make this thing happen when you don't have your at your best. You've got to use your acumen. You've got to use your will. That stuff matters to me, and it matters in kickboxing. And every year, Masato is going against the best fighters on the planet because he's automatically in this tournament, automatically in the elimination, and he's getting guys like Bukau and Kachinko like yearly. But this one doesn't go his way. Again, that's two losses to Andy Sauer. Then he goes on the streak that would pretty much wind out his career. Did not lose after that Andy Sauer fight. Beats Virgil Colacuta in a very entertaining K1 tournament, or qualifying tournament for the 16. He gets a victory over Gago Drago, of course, and then Yoshihiro Sato came after that in the semis. And then in the final of that year, he beat Artur Kashenko. Now, again, there was some criticism here because Yoshihiro Sato for sure had an argument for beating him, and Kashenko, I thought, did beat him. But the idea that as he got a little bit older, he got, you know, tools aren't working the way they were when they were young, but he's still a good fighter with good fighting IQ. For him to go out there and get another K1 World Grand Prix, add two to his list, because it was important for him to get to that two number, because Bukau had two, Andy Sauer had two, Georgia Petrosian then went on to have two. That was the big number for him, and I think that it would have been easy to dismiss him from the greats if he didn't get that second one. But beating Kashenko in the extra round, and I do think that he won the extra round, I thought that that was the most important win of his fighting career. Kashenko went on to be great. Drago went on to have a really solid career. Yoshihiro Sato, as I mentioned before, very, very good, steady guy who went to a final himself. All these things add to what was the legend of Masato. Like these great wins, to be in the best tournament every year, to carry the promotion on your back. There wouldn't have been a K1 Max if there wasn't Masato. And when he stopped having, you know, success, when he got older, when he looked like he wanted to walk away from the game, I'm telling you, so many people ratings-wise left it when he left, because that's how important he was. But he left us with one more memory. No, I'm not talking about the two exhibitions that he's done recently with Gomi and Kid Yamamoto. I'm talking about he fought Andy Sauer in a five-rounder, and he got a victory over Andy, which means that he got a victory over Andy and Bukau, the two guys to beat him in his prime. Unfortunately, that was supposed to be Petrosian, but Petrosian hurt his hand. But the fact that he got the victory over Sauer meant something, because, man, Sauer got those two Ws over him, and he wanted that back. So if you wonder, or if anybody asks you, why is Masato great? Simply tell them he's got two K1 World Max Grand Prix, which is very important for his era of fighting, that he get at least two, because the other greats of his era had at least two. He fought many of the best guys in the world, and he's got stoppage victories, or at least scored knockdowns over these guys. And he dealt with adversity and got back up. Despite the fact that he was this, you know, physically attractive guy that people were drawn to, that the girls were drawn to, that he went into the homes of Japan, and he was more than just a combat sports star. He passed it. This was a guy who didn't fight in a way or in a manner where he was touch and go. He was exchanging with you. He could punch with you. He could punch with a puncher. You know, he'd take a shot and be rolling with it and land a bigger shot behind it. He could low kick Dutch guys. He really had a good style. He really was a special individual in the kickboxing world. So if anybody brings up the name Masato, most people think about the big era of kickboxing for the Max division. Not that it can't come back, but it was at its height in the 2000s. And when it was at its height, the three kings were Andy Sauer, Bukau Polpromuk, and then the Japanese guy who made it all happen, Masato Kobayashi, or simply Masato. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless. I'm so grateful that you guys have been following me and been with me on this podcast for as long as you have. I will do my best. Like I said, I'm trying to be consistent. One episode a week, at minimum through March. And it helps me that I've got events coming up. K1's got an event coming up next week after the K1 event. I've got a Glory event. So kickboxing is hot right now. Thanks for following. Thanks for listening. God bless you guys and have a good one. Peace.